returns from break in 5 seconds.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to play for you the panel last night. The reason I do, as you know, I left NBC in December. And the opportunity to appear with Bret Baier and the panel often is maybe the most satisfactory thing I've done on television since Searching for God in America for PBS in 1996. Because it's got a huge audience and it's a serious conversation. And I like last night, Ben Domenech, Juan Williams, Brett, myself. Brett's running the show. And this is the way that you talk about stuff normally. But we've got Admiral Stavridis now. I was afraid we had a no-show this morning from the Admiral. Good morning, Admiral.
Hey, good morning. Never a no-show. Just like everybody else, just astounded by these events and trying to contribute here and there.
When you're the Admiral, you get to walk onto the bridge whenever you want, right? Listen, Admiral, I want you to do for me. I am so afraid of saying anything about the actual war because civilians don't understand anything. And I can find one war on Twitter and I can find another war on Twitter. How is the war going? What do you think is happening?
I'll give you three big takeaways at this point, one of which is the incompetence in the Russian ground forces. I think that surprised many of us. Given that they've had a lot of practice, if you will, in Syria, we thought they would be more competent. But if you think about it, what they've been doing in Syria is really a series of small troop engagements. This was a big, massive land event, and they just botched it. In particular, very bad logistics, bad generalship, Hugh. They divided their forces, too many Axis coming in. And an awful lot of conscripts, considering Russia has been trying to get away from conscripts. So number one takeaway, truly weak performance thus far, and I don't think it's going to get better by the Russian ground forces. Number two, big takeaway, of course, is the immense heroism of the Ukrainians. You know, we all expected they would fight. I had them under my command in NATO days. They were partners to us in Afghanistan. I know they have good troops and high morale. They have exceeded all expectations. And if you stop and think about it, they're the ones who's behind them when they turn around. They're looking at their children. They're looking at their spouses. They're looking at their parents. They're looking at their cities. So their morale is extraordinary and high. And they're attriting the Russians at a pretty ferocious clip. And then third and finally, Hugh, I think we hit a pivot point over the last couple of days, and it's not a good one. Instead of trying this kind of blitzkrieg to decapitate and conquer the whole country, the Russians are now turning to, if you will, medieval warfare. Surround these cities, pound them into dust. They're acting more like terrorists, going into mayor's offices, dragging people away with bags over their heads. They are descending to a level of war that is going to prove very ugly over the coming weeks and months. So there's three big takeaways.
Admiral, I wrote a Washington Post column about a driver who picks me up and takes me from LAX to wherever I'm. The purpose of the column, Sergei. Sergei grew up in Volgograd, and we were talking about Stalingrad, which is what it was called when it was the USSR. And the battle that the Russians fought there. It's just a battle of rubble. But it does favor the defender, doesn't it?
It does 100%. And I'll give you another example besides Stalingrad, which is worth understanding and thinking about it. Well over a million people died in that battle. Stop and think about that for a minute. I'll give you another point of comparison, more modern one. That would be the battle for Fallujah in Iraq. Fallujah is a city of about 400,000. It's one-tenth the size of Kiev. It took the 1st Marine Division, the most capable shock troops on the planet Earth, took them almost 2 months to subdue that city, fighting road by road, intersection by intersection, building by building. Urban warfare is brutal. It does favor the defenders. It can be overwhelmed, but it requires massive fires, and that, unfortunately, is where Putin will have to go if he truly wants to subdue this capital.
I'm curious. I want to get to the classic when civilians talk about military, they quote two people, Clausewitz and Sun Tzu. I want to get to that. But if, in fact, Putin adopts Fallujah tactics, they'll be more brutal than our Marines because they won't care about civilians. But they will also end up governing an not just a failed state, but a desert, right? That's what the Romans used to do.
Indeed. And, you know, the expression to salt the earth comes from the Roman conquest of Carthage. After conquering it and losing it a couple of times, they came back and utterly destroyed it with an intent that it would never come back again. Let's hope Putin doesn't go to that extreme. But I think there's another point to be made here, which is how difficult it's going to be for him to hold not just these cities after he's pounded them, but to hold these forests, to hold these farms, these streams across this vast country the size of Texas. And he, I don't think, has the manpower, nor does he have the financial resources. You know, Hugh, war is hell. It's also really expensive. And he is bleeding money right now. For all those reasons, he's got an enormous challenge ahead.
Yeah, I would love for someone to dub Red Dawn in Ukrainian and send it over there. Let me go to the two cliches that civilians use. And I always get the Clausewitz one mixed up. I think he referred to four axes of invasion. I heard General King talking the same thing. You can't have a fist when you can't have four fists, right? So where is the fist? What is it, the south coast along Mariupol and trying to connect Crimea with the Donbass?
I think ultimately his bottom line that he's willing to accept is that slice of land that goes from Crimea up to Russia itself, runs through Mariupol, runs through the Donbass. So, yes, that's an important part of this. To the north, the idea was to come in, quickly subdue Kiev, get Zelensky, execute him probably, and then connect those two vectors, one coming up from the south, one coming down from the north, and then, oh, by the way, two coming in from the east. Hey, here's the problem. When you try to attack everywhere, you attack nowhere, unless you have huge numbers of forces. The Russians diluted their forces. It's bad generalship. I'm sure you heard that from Jack Keane. Hey, I wouldn't, if a war college army colonel put that plan together, I'd give him a D. It just fell apart.
Some people are getting worse than Ds. They're getting Cs, cells. They're being sent away. Okay, the second cliche, Sun Tzu, always leave your opponent a golden bridge. And that means a face-saving way of retreat. Is there such a way here for Putin to get out of this?
I wouldn't say at this point it's going to be face-saving because the proliferation of perhaps the greatest weapon on the battlefield, and that, Hugh, is the cell phone. Everything has been videoed. Everything is on the public record. Everything has been beamed across the world. Think about trying to fight World War II as one of these dictators with cell phones everywhere, and the truth becomes a very powerful weapon. So I don't think he can save face, but I think that there is a climb down which might involve providing Russia some level of authority in that region to the southeast that we just discussed. The rest of Ukraine remains a sovereign state. To get that deal done, you're probably going to have to put Zelensky's application to NATO in deep freeze. And, you know, Hugh, everyone's going to hate that deal. Putin's going to hate it because he will not have gotten what he wants, all of Ukraine. Zelensky will hate it. He'll be the prime minister who presided over the partition of his nation. The West will hate it because to get that deal, we're going to have to give Putin some level of relief from sanctions, perhaps back to where they were, status quo bellum. Everyone will hate it, but that's the closest I can think of to a climb down. Look, we're a long way from having that conversation. Both sides are still fighting hard, and I don't see any quick resolution here.
Can I go back then and ask you two more military questions? Do they have a Marine Corps? Do they have a 101st Airborne? Do they have a Big Red One? Because I haven't seen any serious conversation of this for a civilian, and I imagine you're having those among military people. And then secondly, he sent 8 missiles within 10 miles of Poland. I said to Brett Baer last night, Yeah, those go off course by 10 miles, and you've got that every square inch of NATO involved. What does NATO do when a missile goes awry?
Yeah, we ought to worry about that deeply, and I kind of picture some 24-year-old Russian drinking whatever the Russian version of Red Bull is, and he's tapping in coordinates, and one of those missiles goes across that border and hits, let's say, a U.S. command post. We've got a significant number of forward deployed troops now in that region. And now Todd Walters, General Todd Walters, my relief, Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, he is going to respond. And very quickly, you're in a highly escalatory ladder. So wars begin with miscalculations. That's how World War One started, with an assassination, two sides mobilizing. Suddenly the lights go out in Europe. We've got to avoid that. And I think, therefore, in the midst of all that we're doing for the Ukrainians, we got to keep the channels of communication open with Russia. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs to his counterpart, SecDef to his counterpart, et cetera. To your first question, yes, the Russians have some elite units that have historical resonance, the First Guards, the 8th Tank units, but they are not at the level of anything the U.S. has. They do not stand next to the 18th Airborne Corps, the 101st, the 82nd, 1st Marine Division. Those are storied units, legendary units, who are also deeply blooded from war in Afghanistan and Iraq. We have the best troops in the world, and I would argue the best Navy and Air Force as well. And that's why Putin, in the end, is not going to, my view, cross a NATO border in anger.
Last quick question, though, Admiral. If you're Putin and you look over the last 3 years in the United States, we spent $7 trillion. $7 trillion. None of it went to defense. What is Xi, Putin, and Khamenei, the triple alliance of dictators, the tyrant alliance, what do they think about that?
Well, I think for starters, they recognize that for all of our divisions here at home, which I think is our greatest national security threat, is the way in which we can't seem to come together. They must be watching this Ukrainian situation and thinking, they are kind of coming together. That, I think, ought to worry them. And number two, it's not just what we spend on defense. Our allies spend $300 billion a year. That's NATO. $300 billion is more than China and Russia combined. That's just our allies. So we have a massive, capable war machine. When we overcome our differences, nothing can stop us.
Good word to end on. Admiral James Stavridis, seeing you a lot on TV. Keep doing it. Follow him on Twitter, @StavridisJ. Admiral, thank you. Let me remind everyone, ReliefFactor.com is our sponsor. I've got the bag here. I took it in the first hour. I remind you about it in hours 2 and 3. Nature has anti-inflammatories. They weren't invented by Bayer aspirin. They weren't invented by Tylenol. They weren't invented by Advil. And if you can't take NSAIDs, and I can't, and a lot of people can't, what does nature give you? Nature's medicine cabinet has Icarian, Curcumin, and Resveratrol Omega. Great. How do they work? Well, usually best together. How much? Well, ReliefFactor.com figured that out for you. I don't personally shop at GNC. Who understands that? Who has the time? I have ReliefFactor.com. They're scientists, they're doctors, their formula, their packaging, their successful production of that which works every time. ReliefFactor.com. Please don't forget, over at HughHewitt.com, the Give Life banner at the top for food for the poor. John Androsik is next, America. Stay tuned.
Portions of the Hugh Hewitt Show are brought to you by Food for the Poor.
Hugh Hewitt Show on the Salem.